We have Rob Bujan, who will be in the primary next week.
Yes, I will. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and is the three-way race, but he's running for First Ward Alderman. And just so all our listeners in WGXC's listening area, Acre, Hudson, Catskill, you know, Hudson is part of that. What comprises the First Ward?
Sure, thanks. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome.
So we had the campaign, the Fair and Equal campaign last year that was voted upon, and it redistricted Hudson in order to give an equal vote, to get away from the weighted vote program to an equal vote, one person. And what that did was it changed the geographic makeup of the ward. So the First Ward, if you picture Hudson, and if you're looking at Hudson, and you look at Warren Street at it as its kind of divider, everything south of Warren Street, from the water down by the warehouses, from the water up to the terraces, all the way across Warren Street, up to the west side of Worth, is all now First Ward. So it encompasses much of that Third Ward that was south of Warren, along with the old First Ward.
Okay. And, you know, Rob, I've just gotten to know you a little bit over the last year or so, mostly from Sunday brunches at the Red Dot. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where did you come from? Because you and I are both transplants, I think.
Yes, I'm a transplant.
Me too.
So I have a, I was born in Boise, Idaho, and stayed there for a couple of months, and then moved to Texas, where my father's from. But I grew up in South Jersey, outside of Atlantic City. Then moved back to Texas and spent some time in Europe, moved to New York, and then I landed in Hudson. And the reason I landed in Hudson was actually my mother and her family is from Germantown. We used to have a farm on 9G, which is now Germantown Co-op Farm. We had it for many years in the family. It was a pick-your-own farm. And my mother and aunts and uncles all went to Germantown Central School. My great-aunt immigrated from France after the Second World War, where she met my great-uncle, who had been liberating parts of Paris at the time. And they decided to make Germantown their home. And she started the Germantown Central School Library and things of that nature. So I am familiar with it, kind of spent my summers up here. But in 2010, my husband and I, Jeffrey, just woke up one day and said, you know what, we're kind of done with New York City. Let's not be a weekender. Let's kind of dive in head first. And we made the move.
Why? What made you decide to give up the bright lights of the big city and come to the bright lights of the little city?
Because the bright lights of the little city are a little more manageable. You know, I just feel that New York City has kind of gotten at such a frantic pace, and the amount of people there, the cost of living, everything that, you know, is going on in New York, we were just kind of tired of it. We felt a little exhausted. We wanted to slow down a little bit. Little did we know, when we moved to Hudson, we would actually be busier than we ever were in New York City, because you could easily lose yourself in your apartment for a day or two in New York City. But in Hudson, there are many fundraisers and other events to attend. You know, the summers in Hudson are some of the busiest summers I've ever lived, actually.
Tell me, you know, as someone who has both experienced this area and lived away, what do you think are some of Hudson's strengths and weaknesses? You know, as an observer, what have you seen here?
I think one of Hudson's strengths is its community. You know, at the end of the day, everybody has an opinion. Everybody has an idea as to what they would like to see within the city and what they feel is most important. And I feel that there's a lot of community in the city. So where services may not be able to kind of complete the community picture, individuals or nonprofits will help do that. And I find that we have such a vast array of talent in this city, from artists and engineers and local folks that are willing to volunteer their time. It's just amazing to me to see how many people are willing to volunteer their time. So I think that's a real plus for the community. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think an opportunity for the community now is to figure out, once we kind of regroup as a government in 2018 and we have this new, you know, this new way to vote, because in the weighted vote system, you know, four people could vote against something, and by the time Tracy had to go through the tabulations, everybody always had to wait for the tabulations to be done to figure out if a resolution passed or not. Now that we have this kind of equal voice, it's going to be interesting, and I think there's a great opportunity for the city to come together and for each ward to identify what's very important to them, and that we all sign on for by all five wards in order to help them get to that goal as they help assist us to get to our goal in the first ward.
This is Matt Tombers, WGXC, 90.7 on your dial, WGXC.org on your device, whatever it may be. And I'm here with Rob Bujan, who is a candidate for First Ward Alderman. And I'm asking him what some of his legislative priorities for the First Ward. What are some of those things that you see for the First Ward that you would like to see accomplished?
Sure, that's a great question. You know, I think one thing that's really important that's been in everybody's mind and has had a lot of press is the DRI project that was just awarded to Hudson.
Again,
the downtown redevelopment initiative.
Yes,
this was started last year by Governor Cuomo's office, and this is the second year, I believe, that they took 10 communities, had $100 million, and awarded each of these 10 communities $10 million, and the bridge program for the DRI, the bridge area for the DRI is everything below Second Street in the north, to the north and the south bays. And I think that's going to be really important for both the second ward and the first ward, along with the other three wards, because, you know, any type of economic development that goes on down in the warehouse district, for example, with the, you know, taking down the CAS building and repurposing that property for affordable housing and retail and professional spaces, and having better transportation and having incubators for the trades and things of that nature, that's still going to affect everybody, because it's going to give everybody in the community the ability to have better access to living wage jobs, jobs that, you know, actually pay a wage that you can also afford to live here. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's important that we as a city, you know, just be aware and be able to communicate that. You know, this is still run on a state. It's a state program. It was a state grant. It was, you know, approved by the state. So the program that and the committee that's going to be chosen will be finally chosen by the state. But, you know, it's important that we all have our voices heard in order to, you know, be able to make sure that that money is, you know, appropriately used. I also think, you know, some of the things in the first ward, you know, that we need to look at are, you know, finishing the, you know, simple things like finishing the parking painting lines down below Third Street. The parking in Hudson on the weekends is extremely complicated. It is nearly impossible to find parking on the weekends, actually starting on Thursday usually. And if you don't give guides to those that are living in or not from Hudson in order to be able to park between the white lines, you have people parking all over the street. So it would be very helpful to kind of work on that. The accessibility for sidewalks, pedestrian safety, lighting and ramps at Promenade Hill Park. Looking at the pocket parks and seeing if there's a way that we can have somebody be in charge of, you know, making sure the pocket parks are beautiful and safe for our children. The repurposing of the Dunn Warehouse and figuring out what we're going to do with the Dunn Warehouse, which is also part of the DRI project. And really connecting the waterfront to the rest of the city. I mean, it's you know, we can take a ferry over across the river to Athens and step off onto the strand of Athens, and they have a clamshell where They have bands performing every Friday, and they have, you know, green spaces for people to listen to music and things like that. I think it's really important that we give that to our children. And, you know, what we do to invest in this city now is an investment in 50 years. You know, I think it's the importance of finding the goal or a metric of finding the success of a city is having the city's children come back and raise their family.
One of the things that's important to be able to do that is for there to be affordable housing in Hudson. And that's a huge issue. We talked a lot about it with Tom. I'd like your thoughts about affordable Hudson and affordable housing here in Hudson, because one of the things that makes Hudson so interesting is it's both ethnically and economically diverse. Are we in danger of losing that, and how can we prevent that from happening, and what do you see in terms of housing's future in the city, specifically in your ward, but also in the city in general?
Sure. You know, there's a lot of programs that are going on right now with affordable housing. There are a lot of groups that have had a lot of discussions about it. You know, affordable housing is different than subsidized housing, which is different than public housing. So we need to be sure that, you know, people, when we speak about that we have, you know, the inventory for public housing, for subsidized housing, and for affordable housing. I think one of the struggles in any town that has ebbs and flow of tourism is that you gain more properties that turn into Airbnbs, so there's, you know, less inventory on the market. You have people that are working the service industry that can't afford to live in Hudson, and there's a fine balance there. And, you know, there are a lot of properties that are not on the market right now. There are a lot of buildings that aren't opened, and they could, you know, easily be opened if the owners of the buildings were able to, you know, get them to a point that they could actually make them affordable, make them livable, and get them on the market. We also have an issue of, you know, the danger of housing. You know, we have folks living in houses that, you know, ceilings are falling in and things like that, and we have to be aware of that. We can't put residents at risk with regard to some of the housing issues with those that are living in housing that really it's substandard housing is what it is. The first ward's a little different in the respect that we don't have a lot of multifamily buildings. Many of the houses in the old First Ward that's south of Third, and even north of Third now in the new First Ward to Worth, are for the most part single family dwellings. We do have some apartments and things like that, so we don't have a lot of multifamily housing there. However, you know, we just need to be aware and see what we can do in the warehouse district in order to expand that. We have 2 square miles here. There's not a lot for us to be able to, you know, we can't build out. We can only build up. And, you know, how do we build up, or how do we make the lots affordable and fall into zoning in order to kind of do that? But there are apartments that are just sitting there that are inventory that is not being accessed and accessible to the public right now. So I think we really need to kind of push and incent those owners of those buildings to open them up.
And to bring them up to living standards?
Well, just get them open. Some of them may be up to living standards. Some of them may have to have some rehab done, but they're buildings that aren't occupied at all. I think we need to, you know, occupy the buildings we have. It's really important. It's also sad to kind of walk down the street and you see a building on Warren Street even that's boarded up that's just not being used at all. I mean, that's all prime real estate we have to, you know, make available, and not just make it available for somebody to make a quick buck on it by turning it around in an Airbnb, but actually make it affordable housing, you know, figure out what we can do to, you know, get that, you know, 40 to 50% AMI.
Okay. There are a lot of committees that make up what the aldermen do. What kind of committee, which committees would you like to serve on, Rob?
Well, that's a great question. I've been thinking about this. I think two committees I'd really be interested in serving on are the Police Committee and also the Economic Development Committee. I've worked in for the last 7 years with the city, with both the police department and DPW, with regard to putting on the annual pride parades, and mm-hmm. I feel that I have a good relationship with both DPW and the police, and I think that I really think it's important that we have good solid committee members on all of the committees, but the police committee, really, I do respect the police tremendously, and I think that, you know, I could really work well on that committee. And then the Economic Development Committee, you know, I have a business here in Hudson. We're in the insurance services, mm-hmm. and we've increased our staffing from one employee, which was me, to seven, and we're working on kind of career development, and we give back a lot with regard to healthcare education and things of that nature. So I think I could, you know, with my business experience, bring a lot to that committee too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. What do you see for, because this again is a question I talked with Tom about, because there are lots of young people in Hudson, and there are lots of people like me who are not so young, even though I don't live in Hudson. I live out in Clover, but what kind of programs do you think we need for youth and for seniors?
Well, as you know, Nick Zakos has done a great job with the youth program, and we have Sherry, who's running the senior program now out of the Armory, and I think we have two, you know, really strong leaders there. I think, you know, if you look at it, there's opportunity for, if you look at other communities, there's opportunity for the youth and the seniors to get together and kind of trade their expertise, because, you know, everybody comes to the table with some type of expertise. Somebody had, you know, mine happens to be healthcare mm-hmm. and the delivery of healthcare. But, you know, I don't know if you've read any articles, but there have been some really great programs where nursing homes or assisted living facilities or just senior centers have brought in the youth in order for the youth to sit and train the seniors on social media. Mm-hmm. You know, social media is escaping me at this point. I'm 47 years old, and I tell you, I can't keep up with the new social media like Snapchat and stuff like that. I don't understand it. I don't know how it works for me. I don't know what it does for me in my life. But, you know, as a senior, if you're 70 years old, I'm sure this is moving at a much quicker clip than it is for me. So, you know, bringing in the youth to kind of maybe do some cross-pollination of training, I think that would be a great opportunity. And, you know, what do the seniors bring? The seniors can bring the history of this country and, you know, what it was like 50 years ago. And, you know, as we're quickly gathering data and amassing information through social media, how was it done? How was it communicated, you know, back in the 60s? How did you communicate across the country? How did you communicate across the world? How did you travel? I think, you know, I don't think the youth should lose that history. I think we need to kind of remember that. And I think we, as a country in general, don't do a really good job. And, you know, being from the LGBTQ community, I also think, you know, I look at where we are today, and I don't think we do a good enough job of, you know, remembering the history and kind of, you know, showing where we came from and where we've developed to. Because somebody, you know, a kid who's 13 years old, he knows telephones and he knows smartphones and he knows computers. He just doesn't, you know, they don't know how it was before. So I think there's a great opportunity for the senior center and the youth center to kind of maybe work together on some in tandem programs.
Yeah, I think particularly in the last 50 years, America has been the country of now, not the country of then and now.
Right.
At least observationally, from having worked almost that long in media.
And actually, to add to that comment, Matt, I think we're at a point, we're the country of tomorrow. Like, we don't even want now anymore. We want everything yesterday, and it has to be done in a tomorrow setting. And it's really tough. It's really pushed the way that all services are delivered. You look at shopping. You don't have to leave your house to go grocery shopping. No. Ever.
No.
You know, look at, you know, Amazon bought Whole Foods. You now have this access to this stuff. It's just amazing to me.
It is amazing, and I think that makes it more challenging and even more important that we tell the stories of lives to each other, both current and past.
Right. And, you know, on that note, that brings up something else. There's so many programs out there. There's so many online shopping for even, you know, just for food shopping and grocery shopping, affordable food and grocery shopping for seniors that may not be able to get out and go grocery shopping, or for residents that can't do that. You know, mm-hmm. there's training opportunities there in order to gain access. I mean, if you have access to a computer, which if you can get to the library, if you don't have a computer yourself, you have access to the world at your fingertips.
Great. You do. And that is one of the great amazing things about our lives today. Should the city continue to own the youth center and the cemetery? This is an issue that I'm not really up to speed on or have heard much about. Is this, you know, should we be owning the youth center? Should we, the cemetery?
Honestly, I haven't had a deep dive into that. That's more kind of on a macro level versus a micro level. I'd be happy to, you know, have the conversation when we look at it. I don't know the cost into the cemetery. I think what's happening in the youth center right now is fantastic. I think that, you know, it's great that, you know, they're able to do some crowdfunding in order to get the kids to go to certain events and to, you know, take the day to go to parks and things of that nature. You know, it'd be great if a private donor stepped up and said, you know, we'd like to fund some of this. Mm-hmm. We'd like to, you know, give some money for some of these programs. We have, again, that goes back to that community. We have folks here that, if tapped, probably would be willing to do some type of initiative.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that is a big word these days when talking about politics is the use of the word transparency. How do you see yourself contributing to the transparency of city government, particularly in the first ward?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, this came up a couple of weeks ago with a meeting that was that somebody held with regard to how do you get your message out? Because, you know, there's numerous ways that we gather information now. For me, the majority of my information is gathered from different blogs in the city, to find out meetings on Facebook, to go to the city website when I need to get some information. But that may not be the avenue for everybody. And I think one thing that would be important is to sit down with First Ward residents and figure out, you know, how can we communicate when we have a common council meeting that is has a direct impact on the First Ward, or if we have a discussion with the DRI again, or when those meetings start, how do we get that information out there if we don't have 100% of the residents online? Do we do it by poster? Do we do it by some other avenue of a bulletin board that's available in order to do that? That, to me, is like the first step of transparency. It's making sure that everybody knows that the meeting's occurring, right? And then, you know, gaining access to City Hall. I think there's, you know, this has been brought up in the last three common council meetings, and I know it's been brought up numerous times by different aldermen that are currently in office. When you have a very difficult common council meeting, the line's out the door. You can't get into the main chambers. You can't really hear what's going on. So, you know, having access to video monitors and speakers that can get into that kind of immediate chamber or the entrance to City Hall, and then having something rolled out on the street, because again, City Hall is in ADA compliance, so there are folks that can't get in there. Or maybe televising it, maybe putting it on a, you know, local access station somewhere that can do that. My father's the mayor in Port Aransas in Texas, and that's how they hold their common council meetings. They televise them live, and then they repeat them a couple of times on television on the local cable channel, mm-hmm. or local access channel. And then I think the third thing is, you know, having discussions with residents. I think it's important that, you know, as aldermen, we do commit to not only going to our meetings and voting and reviewing resolutions and reviewing legislation, but having a biannual or a quarterly meeting or some type of town hall where residents can speak and, you know, say, this is really important to me, and kind of weigh those really important votes. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, transparency obviously is having everybody, you know, have access to the same information, but how do we get out there? So I think that's really important, that I'd like to see that we can make sure that all First Ward residents, and I think all Ward residents, should have whatever their means of media delivery is for information, to be able to know what's going on, what meetings are being held, things of that nature.
On the federal level, it seems that we're moving away from green issues. But I think that my read of the city of Hudson is that it's very interested in greenness, environmental soundness. What are some things over the next couple of years that you could see happening to help make Hudson a greener kind of city?
Sure. You know, I think that anytime you start a sentence off that say on that says on a national level, it's kind of it's the opposite of what's going on a community level, right? Mm-hmm. I think the communities, whether it be the towns, the cities, the counties, even the states at some level, are really still continuing to push what's really important, the environmental. You know, look at all the states that signed on to the to continue the program, even though the United States decided to walk away from the Paris program.
The Paris Climate Accord.
Right. Excuse me. You know, solar's a really important, easy, green answer. It's not free, obviously, you know, but there, I think there's an opportunity to get more solar into the city. I think that, you know, being mindful of our green spaces, I mean, you know, being green is one thing, right? It's, you know, finding ways to not use fossil fuels. It's finding ways to be more efficient with electricity and for, you know, transportation and things of that nature. But it's also our green spaces. It's maintaining and beautifying our green spaces too. And I think there's an opportunity there to gain into that. And I think also, you know, just making the city more, you know, more accessible. I think even like city Wi-Fi, I know that's been talked about. I don't know where that is right now, but having, you know, city Wi-Fi available for folks.
Yeah.
Not a green issue necessarily. It's more of an access issue. But
yeah, but I think an incredibly important access issue, because without Wi-Fi today, you really are disadvantaged in more ways than I can even begin to think.
Right.
You know, I know a couple of people when they were moving who did not have Wi-Fi and were living in the city of Hudson, and it was an economic issue for them. And it really was a hardship. We need good Wi-Fi.
It is. And, you know, the library offers it, and there's some, you know, there's obviously some other private, you know, cafes and restaurants and things of that nature. But, you know, that's New York City's been doing it. You know, Google has worked on getting Wi-Fi out in Chelsea and things of that nature. I think that's really important.
How about universal water water metering? You know, because right now, as I understand it, in Hudson, everybody pays a flat sort of water rate.
$105 every 3 months.
Okay. So should people actually be paying what they actually use, or is the flat rate a better way, in your opinion? Or, you know, what are your thoughts about it? Because I actually wasn't aware until recently that there was a flat rate for water usage.
Right. You know, so you have a small house with, you know, a single person living in it versus a, you know, a 4 or 5 bedroom house that has, you know, a family of 5 in it that may even have a pool. Yeah, I think that that's, there should be some type of water metering. I don't think that there should just be a standard cost for that. But, you know, what is the cost in order to put those meters in too? So we kind of have to weigh that, and how do we, you know, how to, you know, what is going to be that upfront cost to do that? But yes, I mm-hmm. think that there's an unfair balance with regard to water and sewage.
So, all right, tell me, Rob, you have two other candidates opposing you in the primary. What makes you the better candidate? Same question I asked Tom DiPietro. What makes you a better candidate?
So, you know, would I respect my other two candidates. I think they're great candidates. However, what I bring to the table is I have, I have city government experience. I was on the planning board with Tom. As a matter of fact, I did step down this year in order to be able to focus on my campaign. Mm-hmm. I helped run the campaign for mayor 2 years ago for mm-hmm. Tiffany Martin Hamilton. I helped my father from a distance run his mayoral campaign in Port Aransas. I have
And I'm hoping he wasn't affected by Harvey.
He is. The town was about 80% devastated. His house is standing. It probably will have to have a lot of rebuild to it. He is 73 years old, and he's my hero, I have to say. I hope that when I'm 73, I'm the leader that he is leading a community in the Coastal Bend right now. He sleeps about 2 hours a night, and his first and foremost goal is the safety of the residents, getting electricity, power back on. You can't imagine having a town of almost 4,000 people that relies solely on tourism to be devastated like that. It'll be 5 or 6 years before they're anywhere where they were. So while I say that I kind of helped him navigate a couple of things to win office, he's one of the heroes and leaders in this country that we need more of.
Mm-hmm. God bless him.
Yeah, thank you. And just back to kind of my qualifications. I've successfully run a business for over 20 years. I've been in the health insurance consulting business for many years. We've seen drastic growth within our organization. When I started there in my first stint, probably 16 years ago, we had about 7 employees. We're up to about 40 employees. We employ 6 folks here in Hudson. I have a proven track record in, figuring out where the problem is and how to solve that problem while still being able to balance and respect the other person's opinion. And, I love this city. I really do. I pour my heart when I volunteer for a project, or when I, am asked to sit on a board, I pour my heart into that project. And I promise I will work my fingers to the bone for the First Ward residents and for the city, because, it's more than just the wards anymore. We all have our issues in the wards, but we do need to come together as one Hudson, as as our mayoral candidate says, that we respectfully have civil disagreements and come to a consensus for the better of all.
Okay. One of the things that I always do when I'm interviewing somebody is to ask them what I didn't ask them that I should have asked them. What is it that I should have asked you that I haven't asked you?
Well, you may be surprised to know that I actually was in the military. I was in the Army. I come from a family of veterans, and it was instilled. Both my father and my mother were in the Air Force. That's actually how they met. They met in Turkey, in Ankara. My uncle was in the Navy. My great uncle was in the Army. So, you know, we have a long history and a long, proud history of, you know, military family. And I have family that is, you know, that work in the police. I find it really important, and I'm very proud of the fact that I serve this country. And I think it's really important. And it's unfortunate that we can't figure out a way to incent kids, maybe when they're 17 or 18, to maybe take a year. And, you know, if you don't want to serve in the military, maybe serve in the Peace Corps or something like that, because it does kind of give you that last piece. My parents gave me a lot growing up. They they really taught me right from wrong. They taught me, they gave me a great musical taste, let me tell you that. Both my parents have some of the best music taste in the world, so I treasure that. And, you know, they gave me the ethics I have. Like, you know, you're just not born into that stuff. Your family, you know, your family imprint is there. Mm-hmm. But the military kind of gave me the last kick in the rear end that I needed to kind of say, now you're an adult, and now you need to start doing this. So I bring that to the table, and I love this country. I really do. You know, being a patriot is not a bad thing. It's a great thing, and I'm quite proud of, you know, serving the country.
That's great. That's a wonderful place to end this interview. There's a smile on Rob's face that I wish you could see. Rob, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me today.
No,
I really
I'm so
appreciate
delighted.
It.
This is-